Dennis Tech of Radio Birdman, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Morning Show. Today we're going to hear from Santosh Nandabalan, the senior New York organizer for Food and Water Watch, about what Governor Hochul has been up to in Albany lately. Plus, we will hear the national headlines from the Public News Service, local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate, and more on the WGXC Morning Show. It all begins after Troy's Jason Martin finishes singing this song. Then it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network. Network. This is the news.
On Wednesday, November 30th, Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers from Catskill celebrate the release of their new single, I Believe in You, from the album How Many Roads, performing at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock. That's Wednesday, November 30th at 8 p.m. at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock. Lex Gray and her Urban Pioneers band that usually features Sonny Rock, Ed Wiliski, Brian DeWan, and Tim Farrell. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information about this show and many others.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of One Universal Media of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowan. You've tuned in to the WGXC local news. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Mid-Hudson News is reporting that a group of Hudson Valley Democratic Party chairs has written to longtime state chair Jay Jacobs, asking him to implement four common sense reforms to increase Democratic operations, provide robust support for county committees, expand and diversify the voices involved in decision-making, and strengthen the party's infrastructure ahead of the next election cycle. The general election this month saw mixed results in the Hudson Valley, ranging from successes in Ulster and Westchester counties to, quote, disappointing outcomes, unquote, for statewide candidates in several counties, as well as the loss of state legislative and congressional seats previously held by Democrats. Last week, two letters were circulated, one calling on Jacobs to step down from his party leadership role and the other from county chairs offering their continued support. The members of the Greater Hudson Valley Coalition declined to sign on to either letter. That group wrote their own letter to Jacobs asking state leadership to convene a session of the State Democratic Committee's Executive Committee before the end of the year to present, discuss, and adopt a plan to implement their reforms. The letter is signed by Columbia County Chair Sam Hodge, Lori Turgeson of Greene County, Michael Dupree and Julie Shiroshi of Dutchess County, and Kaylee McKenzie of Ulster County, and others. Read more about the story at midhudsonnews.com. Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that a Greenville property owner has stepped forward to donate a 5-acre parcel to the town for the construction of a new rescue squad building. The town board unanimously on November 21st voted to approve the contract. Quote, the person has property on Irving Road, unquote, Town Supervisor Paul Macko said. Quote, they want to donate 5 acres of property for the town of Greenville to build a rescue squad building. They're basically donating the 5 acres for $1, and we will cover all the closing expenses, unquote. The town has declined to identify the donor. The Greenville Rescue Squad and the town entered into a new 5-year contract on November 9th, which included plans to construct a new emergency services building for the squad. The town has been considered a plot of town-owned land located behind the Greenville Public Library, but Macko said the Irving Road site is better situated to house the new structure. The property behind the library, quote, would have been a tough place to get in and out of in times of emergencies, especially with parking at the library, unquote, Macko said. Quote, I think the Irving Road property will afford us much safer and quicker conditions to get in and out, unquote. Town officials also established a building committee consisting of town board members John Benson and Will Von Atkinson, plus a couple of rescue squad members, to work through the details of the project. The building is expected to cost somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million, Macko said. Town attorney Tal Rapplier said he will start the process of acquiring the parcel. Read more about the story at theupstater.com. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul on November 23rd nominated attorney Kaylin Whittingham to serve on the Commission on Ethics and Lobbying in Government, the successor entity to the now-defunct Joint Commission on Public Ethics. Whittingham is a former president of the Association of Black Women Attorneys and the principal of her law firm. Her nomination will be subject to a review by a committee of law school deans before her appointment can be finalized. The panel is composed of appointees by the governor, attorney general, state comptroller, and legislative leaders from both parties in the state Senate and Assembly. Hochul previously nominated Michael Cardoza and Frederick Davey to serve on the panel. Both appointments were confirmed by the Independent Review Committee. Quote, I am pleased to nominate Ms. Whittingham for the committee's review and look forward to continuing our work to support the commission's efforts to restore trust in government, unquote, Hochul said. Good government organizations this week urged the final commission appointments to be made so it can begin its work in earnest before the start of 2023. Read the full story at newyorkstateofpolitics.com. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
This is Mitch McConnell when I'm up in the Catskills to go hunt bear and visit my friends in the Greene County Legislature. I always tune into WGXC. I love that weird show, the Nothing Is Real Radio Hour. But it's not on very often. What a bunch of crazy Yankees up there. Where's that station again? Oh, now, remember, it's at 90.7 FM on the dial in my Lexus. I wish we had something like that in Kentucky. Don't forget to vote, y'all.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, November 25th. Local early morning temperatures range from 33 degrees in Medusa to 45 across the river in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 41 degrees. It's possible the extreme western edge of Greene and Ulster counties could see some snow today, but most of us are going to just see rain most of the day, and we get a high temperature of 50 degrees at 2 p.m. Make sure the tarps are secure on those wood piles because the wind gets gusty before dark. Overnight, rain dies down and winds top out at 30 miles per hour. Saturday will be dry and sunny with a high of 53. Overnight, we drop just to the freezing point, then warm up to 46 degrees on Sunday. Rain returning in the early afternoon. Overnight, the cloud cover blankets us and lets temperatures get up to 47 degrees. Rain ends early Monday morning and we get a windy day with a high of still 47. Sunset today will be at 4:15 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:54 a.m. Looking way up, we see the aurora oval is reaching low, touching some of the continental U.S. If the KP goes up, then it could reach even lower. Solar wind speed is currently 464 kilometers per second at 10.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair below 15 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4. Storm level, and the current sunspot number is 61. This has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Al Margolis of Chester, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring,
really boring.
It would be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pig.
Awesome.
All the way down.
That only dogs can hear.
I turned it down. Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
If you took the extreme independent legislature theory to the maximum amount, that it could empower state legislatures to essentially decide otherwise. You have a vote, you don't like the result, the legislature appoints who they want.
Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren of California laid out her concerns regarding the independent state legislature theory, which contends only state lawmakers can regulate elections without interference from state courts. Legal observers, including the Brennan Center for Justice and the Brookings Institution, say the theory is a meritless interpretation of the Constitution. The U.S. Supreme Court is set to hear arguments in Moore v. Harper, which centers on newly redrawn congressional maps in North Carolina. Republicans argue the state Supreme Court did not have the right to invalidate a previous map. Claims of voter fraud may have propelled Christina Caramo to her party's nomination for Michigan's Secretary of State, but may also have cost her the election.
The only reason why my opponent is fighting to get a case tossed out of court or to keep dead people on the voter rolls is because she's intentionally trying to corrupt the election system, because she's an authoritarian seeking to rob you of your voice.
With the majority of races now called, analysts say voters rejected election deniers in more than 85% of statewide races where they were running. Only three non-incumbent election deniers won Secretary of State races around the country in the midterms. It's not surprising former Republican Governor of Maine Paul LePage did not call Democratic Governor Janet Mills to concede the race on election night.
You are not an honest, sincere person. You're an elitist. And I think that America needs better than people who are not caring for the people they govern.
In fact, none of the losing Republican candidates in Maine's top three races have called their winning opponents to personally concede. Election observers say the tradition of the phone call has been waning nationwide due to a growing distrust among Republicans in vote counting. Government analysts say the January 6th committee should make clear the Constitution's disqualification clause can be enforced against former President Donald Trump for his role in efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election and prevent him from holding office in the future. Liz Hempowitz with the Project on Government Oversight says a clear statement by the January 6th committee would provide guidance to state officials to determine their next steps.
They're administrative officials, state officials, courts, and will need to have access to the evidence that the committee has uncovered when they are asked to make this decision of whether or not an individual is disqualified.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In our second episode on the new Electoral Count Act amendments, today we're talking about how the electors are chosen and what reforms are being proposed to keep the system from being manipulated. The Constitution doesn't say much about how electors are chosen. Electors get their jobs in different ways depending on your state and political party rules. Most often, political parties elect or appoint a slate of electors, and often this occurs during the state party convention. Usually, they're party loyalists, like state officials, activists, and campaign donors. They can't be U.S. Senate or House members who would eventually certify the electoral count. Technically, when you vote in a presidential primary, you're actually voting for the slate of electors. If your party's candidate wins, that party's slate of electors is appointed to go to Washington and submit the vote count. But who appoints the slate after the election? Parties, legislatures, or governors? Vagueness in the Electoral Count Act of 1887 was exploited in 2020 as party extremists tried to create an alternative slate of electors loyal to President Trump who would be submitted if a pretext could be found to overturn Joe Biden's win. The 2022 changes proposed for the Electoral Count Act would clarify this, giving authority to only the governor to appoint the slate of electors. With some 2020 election-denying gubernatorial candidates contending in the upcoming midterm, are we still in danger? More in tomorrow's segment, but in the meantime, check out the articles at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
On Friday, November 25th, tune into all sorts of creative community voices on 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear from Santosh Nabavalian, the senior New York organizer for Food and Water Watch, about Governor Hochul signing the cryptocurrency ban. 10 a.m. is time for the Global Agogo Show with music from around the world. And then at noon, after the local news, Michael Wilde is playing 78s on the Mostly Singles Show. 4 p.m., we are live from Acre with the WGXC Afternoon Show. 6 p.m., we're live from Catskill with Clubhouse Radio and teenagers playing their music. And then there's other teenagers in Hudson talking about stories important to them on the Bound by Books Show, sponsored by the Hudson Area Library at 7 p.m. on WGXC. Hudson Valley Sounds has local music at 8 p.m., and then DJ Var has the Friday Night Vibe Session at 10 on 90.7 FM WGXC. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking today with Santosh Nandabalan, who is a senior New York organizer for Food and Water Watch. And we've had Food and Water Watch on many times to talk about various climate issues, but sometimes other environmental matters. So, Santosh, why don't you just start off maybe a little bit? What do you do for Food and Water Watch? And you know, why are you a climate activist?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, I've been doing climate activism for 7 years now, for a while. I got into activism really by accident. You know, I just happened to be at home when a canvasser knocked on my door. And I, you know, I didn't know anything about fracking. I didn't really have a concept of the modern day environmental movement. But I thought this was like a really cool experience. You know, I learned about fracking. I helped with the campaign and I saw that that was a job. So I tried canvassing myself and that was really, really going door to door. Having those conversations got me engaged in a political process that I didn't even really know was happening around me. So I became an activist because someone knocked on my door.
I actually was a door-to-door canvasser back in 1985. Spent the summer in Connecticut, door knocking as canvasser, raising money on the bottle bill. I was not very good at it. I'm a fairly good door knocker, but not a good fundraiser. So glad you have stayed with it.
Yeah, it's all about confidence. But I'm glad that there's like a pipeline of canvassers to now full-time activists. It's a really important skill, and it's a really important way to build a movement.
So what have you been doing for Food and Water Watch?
Well, we've had a lot going on, right? We just had an election that really shaped a lot of what our work was. At the state level, we are working on really pressuring the governor on implementing and even strengthening our state's climate law, so the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. And this last legislative session was not the best for climate activists. We saw really two climate bills, which are really the floor of what we should be passing, get through to Governor Hochul's desk. So that's a bill she needs to sign to get the cumulative impact study here in New York for environmental justice communities, as well as the cryptocurrency mining moratorium, which is a two-year ban on mining for cryptocurrency with frack gas facilities in New York State. So we've done a lot to build up those campaigns. We're also working on campaigns to get us closer to public powers, so pass the Build Public Renewables Act, and very importantly, when building electrification. So that's getting gas hookups out of new buildings starting 2024 for small buildings, 2027 for buildings seven stories or higher, and moving them to renewable energy, to energy efficiency measures, especially heat pumps. Those are really strong legislative measures we need to get to Governor Hochul and have her sign if we're going to win, basically uphold the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. So there's been a lot of yelling at politicians, a lot of lobbying, a lot of getting constituents engaged, pressuring their own elected officials to then go to the governor to get these initiatives done. So we've done that at the state level.
If I could jump in here just a second. On the cumulative impact bill, which is really important, the idea is, say you're going to, you know, want to get a permit to do a factory or some type of power plant, particularly in a low-income community of color, if the bill is signed into the law by the governor, not only would you look at the emissions from this particular plant, but you would look at all the other emissions that's already coming about. Because, you know, adding pollution into a neighbor that's already polluted is a really bad idea, but that tends to be what happens. But the question I had on the cryptocurrency, I believe it's called, you know, it's called proof of work, where you use all these computers to solve mathematical equations, particularly to get Bitcoin. But the cryptocurrency, I guess one of the big brokers just completely collapsed, and Bitcoin value has gone down more than 50% since November. Is there much future for the cryptocurrency, and how's that impacting upon the issue? And why are you guys so concerned about cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I mean, look, the viability of cryptocurrency on its own is that comes into question. And that, what you're citing, the recent news, I don't really know if cryptocurrency is a real thing we should be investing in the future. But we certainly shouldn't be investing in it in a way that burns more gas and destroys our environment. We are incredibly concerned. Right now, there was a recent approval for permits of the Forrester plant, denial of permits for the Greenwich plant. So these are power plants that run solely to mine cryptocurrency. It's not for electricity. It's not for heat for homes. And we're burning gas for essentially a digital currency that we don't really know what impact it's going to have long term. For us, it's truly an environmental issue. We simply cannot build out more fossil fuel infrastructure. We can't do it under this guise either. It's really that point in blank for us that this has been kind of the case for all fossil fuel plants. You know, we've fought the Danskammer plant, the Astoria, the Gowanus plant recently. Those are big victories. We simply can't afford any more fossil fuel infrastructure. And I think this bill, which is now sitting on Governor Hochul's desk, needs to get signed immediately to make sure that we can study the impacts that we have on that mining for cryptocurrency has. And then if they're not good, we put an end to it. So that's really what's on the table now. And what we are worried that if it doesn't happen sooner than later, we're going to get to a point of no return.
Now, I need one of the additional problems, like some of these plants, the amount of carbon emissions that are now attributable to these proof of work cryptocurrency mining operations is greater than like countries like New Zealand and Argentina. And what has been happening is that because they use so much electricity, because they're running thousands and thousands of computers in order to, you know, solve the mathematical equation, which creates Bitcoin faster than anybody else, so they can get the tens of thousands of dollars from the Bitcoin. They've actually been beginning to look at, well, you know, it'd be cheaper if we just bought off some of these old power plants that were shut down just because they were too polluting and run them ourselves directly. And that way we'd reduce our utility bill. And I guess that's one of the reasons why, you know, cryptocurrency has become so controversial. What's holding up, you know, Governor Hochul? I saw before the primary that, I'm sorry, before the, I think it was before, but before the general election, that climate was the second most important issue for among Democrats, or actually tied with abortion.
Yep.
And in the general election, the exit polls, at least on election night, Susan R. Better Spectrum One said that climate was the number two issue overall for all voters, not just Democrats. So what's the delay with the good governor?
Yeah, there's no denying climate is on the mind of many voters. The Bond Act, which was on the ballot, outperformed Hochul by over 15 points, which is just a testament to people just want clean air, clean water, and a livable planet. Your guess is as good as mine. She should have signed this already. We have been outside of her office recently. We did a press conference not too long ago, really calling on her, you know, the election is over. There's no reason now for her not to sign this bill. I mean, I expect her imminently to do it, but I hope that's not wishful thinking. You know, there has been talk, there are ties to the crypto industry with the administration. You know, it's all up in the air. So she really needs to put our doubts at ease and sign this thing sooner rather than later. And if she's smart, she'll do it today or tomorrow.
I worked a lot actually with Food and Water Watch on a far more progressive climate bill than what became the CLCPA, the New York Fossil Fuels Act, which was a little bit more focused both on immediately shutting down and stopping all new fossil fuel plants, but also had a much quicker timeline of moving to 100% clean renewable energy. And I was just reading an article, I believe in New York Focus, and they were making the point that, you know, despite, you know, some medium-sized goals to build out renewable energy, the reality is that not much new utility-scale renewable energy has come online since the law has been passed. And the reality is that, you know, since Governor Pataki in 2002 set up, you know, some fairly ambitious goals, especially for a Republican, on how to move renewable energy, you know, New York still's only added, you know, 5%. You know, how do we actually get these guys to build renewable energy, not talk about renewable energy?
Yeah, that's a really important point. I think we're maybe just a little bit above 5% combined between solar and wind now, which has not really changed much in the last 5 years. And the goals have only gotten more stringent since the passage of the 2019 climate law. This is a great segue. I mean, I think we're at a point really, the private industry has failed us on transitioning to renewable energy. Corporate utilities have been jacking up rates to build out pipeline projects to inundate communities that are heavily hit by air pollution and by climate change with more fossil fuel infrastructure. I think the fact is we can't keep on relying on these corporate utilities the way we do, and we need the state to step up. And so there's been a push really over the past now 2 years to pass a very important bill, the Build Public Renewables Act, which would unleash NYPA. So this is the New York Power Authority. It's limited on how much renewable siting it can do, how much renewable energy it can come out of it. If we unleash the New York Power Authority, this is an incredible resource New York State has. We can get to 75% renewable energy by 2030 and make the CLCPA goals incredibly achievable. Right now, we were able to pass it through the Senate last session. A big obstacle for the climate movement, not just on this, but a lot of climate bills, has been our Assembly Speaker, Carl Hasty. But we have really key leaders, you know, Sarahana Shrestha, who ran in Kingston, New Paltz, that Assembly District. She ran really strongly on this Build Public Renewables Act, won that primary, won that general election. We're going to have more leaders like her push that. But if we're going to move from that 5 or 6% mark up to a significant amount more, we need to get that bill passed.
And this is not exactly a radical proposal, because in fact, Governor Cuomo 4 years ago had proposed that the New York Power Authority begin developing renewable energy. But unfortunately, the private solar and wind companies convinced the legislature to block what Cuomo had proposed because they wanted to, you know, maintain their profits. So how do we convince Speaker Hasty, who, you know, I've only been doing this 50 years. I don't know how many more years I got. But in the 50 years that I've been actively involved in the New York State Legislature, he is by far the worst speaker or head of the New York State Assembly on environmental issues. It used to be you could always count on the Speaker of the Assembly to be the environmentalist among the you know, the gang of three that made all the decisions. And that's not the case with Carl Hasty. And then Steve Englebright, longtime chair of the Environmental Committee in the Assembly, yeah, I like to see him a little bit stronger, but pretty good guy. Unfortunately, it looks like he may have lost his election. And the Senate chair of the Environmental Committee, he decided not to run for re-election to the Senate after being trounced in a race for district attorney down in Nassau County. So how do we change the leadership of the New York State Assembly and Senate on environmental issues?
Well, you brought up like kind of the local politics here. No more Englebright, no more Kaminsky. We'll see kind of what happens with those assignments as we go forward. Look, this is really the power of community organizing. Hasty has two constituencies, right? So he has the voters in his district that vote him into office. But then he is the Assembly Speaker. So he has his rank and file Assembly members who functionally can move him. And what we saw last year is we had we had leaders that weren't stepping up to the plate. So I mentioned Sarah Hanna, her predecessor, who's the current incumbent, about to leave in a month, Kevin Cahill, was not pushing this bill, was not advocating. And that was kind of old guard, you know, status quo type leadership needs to go. So we have been really focusing on this primaries to make that an issue. So in races where we won him, like Sarah Hanna, great. We're going to have now someone that can organize in the ranks with us inside Albany to make sure that we can build enough pressure among rank and file assembly members to then move Carl Hasty to do the right thing. And then those that won but had close races or saw these races happening, they've got to pay attention and see this is where the wind's blowing and how the tides are turning. No pun intended there, but they need to listen to constituents and then go to Hasty and make sure that he acts on this. It's an incredibly popular bill. It's got a ton of traction. It passed through the Senate. Governor Hochul has suggested she's open to getting this done. So we really need Speaker Hasty to step up. And the way to do it is kind of through this rank and file organizing of his assembly members.
I'll just mention for local people, you know, a similar bill is to try to get New York State to agree to convert both the state capitol and the Empire State Plaza to 100% renewable energy. You know, we fought 4 or 5 years ago to defeat governor proposal to put some more frack gas turbines into the Sheridan Hollow neighborhood. That neighborhood has basically been running a steam plant for more than a century in order to power the Capitol and now the Empire State Plaza. And, you know, after a century of pollution, they should get, you know, a much cleaner operation. But I know Food and Water Watch also, you know, engages in national advocacy. It's a national, you know, organization. And I kind of remember seeing you on Facebook or something being let out in handcuffs or something at Senator Schumer's office. What do we need Senator Schumer to get better on?
A lot. You know, he was really talking the talk not too long ago on climate. You know, he biked with us during the Climate Can't Wait Week. He stood against fossil fuel power plants. But recently, as maybe some listeners know, Senators Schumer and Senators Manchin kind of came up with a backroom deal. It's been colloquially kind of coined the dirty deal or the dirty pipeline deal, which would fast track a ton of fossil fuel projects. I think it's something like 19 of them, 19 or 20, including the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which would go through West Virginia and Virginia. It would also gut environmental review processes, making sure that, you know, there's less community input and less information being sent out around new fossil fuel projects that are being proposed. So it was billed as some kind of, I think they called it like permitting reform, but really it was a handout written by the American Petroleum Institute, given to Manchin, and then some negotiation happened between Senators Manchin and Schumer. They claim that this is something they needed to do to get the Inflation Reduction Act passed. That has already passed. It's a done deal. President Biden has signed it. We don't need to give any handouts to the fossil fuel industry. So a lot of us, we had like close to 100 or so folks directly after we got this news, really quickly mobilized outside of Senator Schumer's New York City office. About a dozen of us got inside, you know, made some noise, occupied the space there. And yeah, we participated in civil disobedience to say we can't fast track fossil fuel projects. We can't gut our environmental review processes, can't throw black and brown communities under the bus. All this fossil fuel infrastructure has got to go. And that is still creeping up. So we were able to stop it. There was an initial push to get this done, passed in some what's must pass budget legislation. That was stopped September 30th, but there is now kind of like a zombie. The stuff is coming up again. Manchin still wants to get this through. He's going again to try to stick it to some kind of must-pass legislation before the end of the year. And we're simply going to have to organize and make sure that our political leaders step up on this.
Well, I believe Senator Manchin has quite a bit invested in coal himself. And is also, there's a pipeline he's been trying to promote against Mountain Valley down in his right. state. But, you know, one of the things I've been hearing a lot of the, Democratic liberals say, well, yeah, we don't really want the permitting to help fossil fuels. What we really need the permitting for is we got to speed up the transmission lines, because we're going to build all this renewable energy. We got to get it, you know, to New York City and the other big electric users. And everybody opposes us when we want to build new transmission lines. So how do you buy this concept, you know, oh, this permanent reform really is about transmission lines?
I mean, if it was about transmission lines, they wouldn't be pushing for fossil fuel infrastructure. It's kind of like a sleight of hand trick, right? You say one thing and you do another.
That's what the politician's middle name is, isn't it? Sleight of hand.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Manchin is a real class act. And hopefully, you know, we can get our senator in Georgia, Raphael Warnock, elected so that we can kind of negate that vote with a 51st Democrat. But this is, yeah, look, this is a senator who's very tied to what, as you mentioned, the coal industry, takes a ton of fossil fuel money, is in cahoots with the American Petroleum Institute. This is a really weak greenwashing attempt, but they're going to do what they can to somehow squeeze in more pipeline infrastructure. You know, this is kind of the game of the fossil fuel industry, is delay, you know, this transition as long as you can, keep out building out investments, and then reek it in when you raise rates through utilities. So, you know, there is really no, it is a fossil fuel permitting bill. It is to make sure we can expand more fossil fuel infrastructure in the country, and we simply have to say no to that.
Now, you know, even with the Democrats holding on to the Senate, you know, even before, the only thing they could do was budget reconciliation, which only required 50 votes plus the vice president. There's been a big push over the last year and a half to actually get President Biden to issue a series of executive orders. People can look at climatepresident.org. Is there a renewed pitch? Now it's clear that Congress is probably even more gridlocked than it was, you know, before the election.
Yeah, I think really now more than ever, especially looking to 2024, we need Biden to step up in the plate. The ask is still the same here. He can declare a climate emergency today and really get a lot of the stuff done that we need to get done. So that's making sure we're not exporting more fossil fuels, making sure we're ending out the build out of fossil fuel projects throughout the country, and banning fracking nationwide. That can happen with the stroke of his pen. And we need to continue to renew that call, like continue to build that pressure. Not only, you know, for our planet, yes, for our health, yes. But we're seeing this time and time again, and you mentioned this earlier in the interview, climate is a huge issue for voters. And if we're going to take back power to an extent that we need to in 2024, we need to take this block seriously and make sure that they're heard and make sure that they're coming out to vote.
Now, I'm at the age where almost everybody's beginning to look a whole lot younger than me. So I may overestimate your age, but, you know, most voters under the age of 30, 35, overwhelmingly by 22 percentage points, you know, win for the Democrats. It's the only reason the Democrats even survived this election cycle. What do young people want these days in terms of climate?
I think maybe I'm on the edge there, Mark. I'm
okay.
31. But I, you know, I think really, really clearly the youth movement, you know, the rise of Sunrise, the more youth climate leaders coming in, not only New York State, but everywhere else, it's never been more clear that this is the direction the Democratic Party has to go, that we really need to prioritize global warming, prioritize taking down the fossil fuel industry, not only as a political thing, but this is an existential point. This is our futures we're talking about. I think that's point blank. That needs to resonate. And to some extent it has. You've seen the rise of kind of an emergent leftist movement among the youth. You know, a lot of this stemmed from Bernie's initial presidential run in 2016. But it's only grown, and that is the direction that hopefully, if we're going to get power and save the planet, that is the direction the Democratic Party needs to go.
So we only have about 2 minutes left. We've been talking with Santosh Nandavan. he'll give a better pronunciation at the end. You know, the Food and Water Watch used to bring thousands of people during the whole fight about fracking to the state capitol, annual State of the State address. You guys are infamous, famous for, you know, bird dogging the governor everywhere that he or she goes. Well, what do you have in store for us in the coming year that we should be looking out for, even before then?
Yeah, I mean, look, let's make sure, you know, let's turn our eyes to Georgia and the immediate future, right? So before the December 6th runoff, we have a chance to phone bank or write letters for that. If we can get a 51st Democratic senator, you know, we're talking about Manchin's dirty deal, we can totally negate his vote. After that, you know, really turn our eyes back to New York. Two more important bills. I'm hopeful that Governor Hochul any day now will sign this cryptocurrency moratorium into law, and that will be done this year. Coming up next year, we're going to put a real emphasis, have a real push on building electrification. So getting the All Electric Buildings Act into Governor Hochul's executive budget is the real first step to make sure this gets done. And then also make sure that she prioritizes the Build Public Renewables Act. So that's an upcoming Governor Hochul moment. She normally gives a State of the State address in the beginning of January, where she'll lay out her priorities, what's going in her budget. We want to make sure those things are in there. And expect to see us. We're going to continue to do kind of the classic bird dogging and rallying we've always done. But we'll be, you know, doing these same kind of bus trips to Albany, doing big actions, lobbying, in particular around the All-Electric Buildings Act. That's something New York really should have done this year. We need to get it done really quickly. Make sure that we move our buildings off fossil fuels immediately. It is a huge part of our carbon footprint. Something like close to a third counts for a third of what we get in carbon and methane emissions.
And I know that one of your colleagues, Alice Beecham, has a letter to the editor or even an op-ed in the Times Union earlier this week, if people want to check that out. Santosh, you got Facebook page, web page, if people want more information?
Totally, yeah. You can, you know, I don't have social media, so this is a weird plug, but you can check out the Food and Water Watch New York Facebook page. There are updates constantly on actions, upcoming events. The best place to, if you're trying to get plugged in for the next event, next phone bank, next canvas, is go to our Mobilize page. I think it's mobilize.us/foodandwaterwatch. Worst comes to worst, just Google Mobilize Food and Water Watch.
Okay. Well, thank you, Santosh. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Next up, we have brand new music from 2022 from Hudson-based band Buke and Gace and the So Percussion troupe that is largely based on the Bard College campus. This song is called Hold It In from Buke and Gace and So Percussion. Thank you.
Visionary.